CBIA Foundation released workforce blueprints to strengthen high school to career pipelines. And I always love the opportunity to talk to CBIA and really look at how do we align, especially high school workforce programs, with our state's current and future economic needs. We talk all the time about how we have workforce shortages in a lot of different industries. And I think CBIA is onto something, cracking the code about, hey, maybe we got to start younger. We got to maybe change sort of the curriculum, if you will, and get kids more interested in different careers and sort of fill those workforce shortages sooner rather than later. Joining us now to talk more about this is Dustin Nord, the CBIA Foundation Director. Dustin, welcome to the show. How are you?
Morning, Melissa. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So I know that these plans, or this blueprint, if you will, was unveiled at the 2026 Connecticut Workforce Summit this week. Talk to us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so we released this report. We've been working on it for over a year now. We've been working in part with J.P. Morgan. This was our chance to look into what are the challenges of delivering these types of opportunities for students in high school to start learning about different careers and ultimately, you know, hopefully getting them into those careers that are well-paying careers, areas where there's high demand. You know, ultimately, what, you know, we were funded in part through J.P. Morgan. What part of what their frustration was that they feel like they were spending so much money and having to spread it around the whole state without any sort of interconnectivity. And that's a lot what we heard as we developed this report, was that fragmentation and the lack of coordination in the system has made it really challenging of creating a coherent workforce system.
So some of the key findings here, as you just started to talk about, Dustin, more than half of projected job growth is accessible to workers without a bachelor's degree. Do you think the average person in Connecticut knows that? And when I say that, I'm not talking about the kids. I'm talking about the parents and this idea of you got to go to college or bust.
Yeah, I don't think most people would know that. No, I think that most people would assume that it's probably majority college education. And to be fair, you know, college education is still really important. There's a great premium for going to college still. But ultimately, there are many, many students that are not going to be going to college, that are not going to have be on that pathway. And that's what we really try to call out with that figure. You know, there's a lot of opportunity out there. And then when we look at where we're actually training the students, it doesn't necessarily line up with what we are looking or what we expect there to be in the job market going forward.
And I'm curious if there's also, though, this I'm not going to call it understanding of options in high school, because I think Connecticut has done a really good job, honestly, on both fronts. I think that Connecticut has been working on letting students know that it's not just college or bust. There's a lot of different opportunities. You know, when I see college and career fairs, for example, it's not just college fairs anymore. Like, I'm noticing more and more of, hey, it doesn't have to just be a four-year college, that there are different things that you could be doing after you graduate high school. But the other thing, too, is you don't have to just go to the typical public high school. There are tech schools. There are charter schools. There are aqua schools. Aquaculture, I should say. I'm wondering if you think we have a good knowledge and understanding of that as well, that, you know, when your kids finish up middle school, that you don't have to just do the typical either public or private school. There's actually, I think, a lot of different options, including even different programs that they could, you know, have in their curriculum.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it. You know, I think one of the things that stood out to me as we were doing this research is that, so we have the career and technical education high school system, the CTECs, and they get over 9,000 applicants a year, and they accept less than half of them just because we don't have enough capacity in those schools. And so I think part of what you're saying is, you know, I think related to that, which is a lot of people don't know about it, in part because, you know, like there's not always outreach in certain communities because there's not enough space anyway. You know, there's the people that know about it are applying, but we don't have enough space. So one of the recommendations actually in the report is to expand some of the capacity that we have at those schools, or to create new satellite type campuses at comprehensive high schools, sort of your standard, you know, town high school, so that more students can have access to that kind of instruction.
I'm curious, Dustin, another thing that stood out to me. High school program enrollment does not align with key industries facing the strongest workforce demand, including healthcare, hospitality, transportation, manufacturing, and management. That sounds like a curriculum problem. That sounds like something that would involve the Department of Education. And hey, what are we actually teaching kids in high school?
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And that's what I wanted to convey there is that as we looked in, so we have this what's called Perkins funding at the state level that comes from the federal, a pot of federal money that we allocate to schools. And when I looked at where are those courses, where's that course taking actually happening? You're absolutely right. It wasn't in these high demand areas. You know, for example, the biggest section of jobs that are going to be some of the highest paid, you know, most opportunity are going to be in healthcare, but fewer than 4% of course enrollments in technical education through this Perkins funding was going towards healthcare coursework. And so there's a huge missed opportunity there and a big mismatch. And so, yeah, I think the Department of Ed, Department of Labor, and also I think it comes down to, industry and local boards of ed being more cognizant of, being more, self-reflective of where are we putting this money? Where are we putting the effort and resources? And is that matched up with where we're going as a state?
The CBIA Foundation for Economic Growth and Opportunity, with support from J.P. Morgan Chase, released the Connecticut Workforce and Education Strategy Blueprint. This is a comprehensive plan to better align high school workforce programs with the state's current and future economic needs. In layman's terms, it's to get high schoolers into the workforce, especially where we have some shortages. And these are really important industries where, A, they have great job security. They also have great jobs. They're making good money, and they could probably stay in the state. I mean, a lot of winning here, a lot of winning going on here if we could just kind of get it together. So we are talking to Dustin Nord, who is the CBIA Foundation Director. I also am going to link the full report if you want to look through it to Dustin's podcast at the end of the show. So, Dustin, I want to talk about how do we address these challenges. The blueprint actually outlines four core priorities for action. What are they?
Yeah, so number one is reducing structural barriers. So there are some things like scheduling or liability law. So some of the more nitty-gritty details that get in the way, and I think there's some really great opportunity there. Another one is establishing clear coordination mechanisms. So one of the things we heard is that it's an incredibly fragmented system, and so there's not a lot of ownership of different areas. So establishing that ownership and making clear that we have certain levels of expectations for that ownership for different entities in the state. The third one was building better information infrastructure. And so this was maybe taking some of what I learned from looking at Perkins funding and doing that more regularly, establishing better definitions about what we think career readiness looks like, rather than some of our catch-all terms that we have currently. And then finally, it was strengthening the employer and education alignment. So employers are engaged across the board. They are constantly working with high schools, with colleges, with many different people within the workforce education system, but there's not a lot of coordination there. And so they're often overtaxed because they're being asked to be in this school and that school, in this area and that area. How can we better improve that alignment? And how can we better make sure that not only are students getting the most out of it, but are the industry partners getting their voice heard as well?
The part, Dustin, where you said reducing structural barriers, I want to dig into that a little bit more. What exactly do you mean by that when you say barriers?
And so one of them, for example, is that you might have a career and technical education course, say for healthcare.
Okay.
And healthcare will require certain specialized skills. So you often need somebody who works or has experience working in the healthcare system to actually do the instruction there. And right now there are some low hanging fruit areas in terms of improving the certification process for those workers. Cause right. We heard stories of, we wanted to start this program. We wanted to create this opportunity for students, but we couldn't get the instructor because there was X, Y, and Z barrier that they just weren't willing to go through in order to become our instructor. So how can we reduce some of those barriers? It's also things like, again, I think I mentioned scheduling. Scheduling is a weird one, but you imagine that as soon as it was brought up to me, it made a lot of sense. You have one school district in one town where maybe they do a different block schedule every single day. That's going to be challenging for an employer to provide an opportunity for those students at the end of the day, for example, if they maybe are only available 3 days in that week versus a district that maybe has hour blocks that rotates every week. So you might have 5 days in a row where you can go into that employer. So there's little things like that are the real structural barriers that get in the way of work-based learning opportunities and career and technical education.
So I love all of that, Dustin. Think it makes an awful lot of sense. But logically, how soon can we start to bring those barriers down? So one of the things you talked about earlier in this segment was that if there are kids who want to go to, for example, like technical schools, or they want to go, you know, to more specialized schools, we just don't have the capacity right now. So, you know, that takes, you know, finding a building, finding the staff, you know, creating that actual opportunity, a ton of money, I would imagine. You know, so how soon can we put into place, so, you know, some of the things to make this a lot easier? I mean, what would be kind of the recommendation? I go back to the Department of Ed. I feel like we really have to, and I know that would take time and it would take energy and effort, but I think you got to look at curriculum first and foremost. Like, to me, I don't know why, for example, we don't have more life courses in the public schools for high school. So we just passed a law not that long ago for just financial literacy. I don't know why to me, that's a no-brainer. Every kid needs to know how to, I know it's not balancing a checkbook, but they got to know how to budget. They have to know how to handle money. They should be financially literate before they go to college or they become adults. That's a no-brainer to me. The fact that that took so long to put that curriculum in place, I don't know why we don't have more life skills. Like, so for example, you know, I understand manufacturing, engineering, sciences. I get that. That's the STEM, right? So we have this focus on STEM. We've done a good job of incorporating that more into the public schools and having that be part of curriculum. And that could certainly help you in an engineering or a manufacturing career. Maybe not necessarily, but I think it's important stuff to know. And I think you could do that in the immediate future. It would just take time and energy and really the Department of Ed being on board to kind of restructure what's required before you graduate high school. And I think that could help kids get into the workforce sooner.
Yeah, I think to your first question, I think that there are probably layers of these recommendations. Sure. In terms of how feasible they are over what timeline, right? So I would say, for example, that a lot of these data recommendations are things that we could implement in the near term that are sort of low-hanging fruit that would allow us to at least understand what we need, right? Otherwise, we're sort of just shooting from the hip. On the personal, on the financial literacy side, for example, you know, I think one of the challenges that on two ways, one of them is, again, you need to know that that's a problem. And if you're not collecting the data, how can you know that it's an issue or that there's a gap? And then I think number two is there is a finite amount of time in a day for these students. And I know that that's something we heard a lot from educators is we have all these requirements for what we need to do. How can we make sure if we have these new things that come along, it's not like we can just slot them in, right? We need to replace something else. And I think that's where we get into these challenges. And I think, but again, if we don't have the data to back up that this is a need, that this is an area that we need to be pushing our resources, then it's really hard to make that case that we should do those types of moves and offset some other type of learning in the curriculum that we have. And so I think, when we have that data in the near term, I think that's some near term things that we can do. Some of the legal changes that we can do, I think, are probably more medium term. And to your point, I think building a broader capacity is a bit more of a long term project. But if we had started this 10 years ago, you know, we wouldn't be in this position. So the next best time to start is today, I think.
Right. I agree. And look, one of the other key findings we didn't talk about, proven career pathway models improve graduation rates, earnings, and economic mobility, especially for students from underserved backgrounds. That has to be a key takeaway. And I think a huge motivating factor to, you know, hey, change the system maybe a little bit, or at least put more effort into looking at this. And again, better aligning that high school to workforce pipeline and figuring that out, because it is a really untapped potential that Connecticut could benefit from if we really focus on it. And I'm so glad CBIA does. Dustin Nord, I want to thank you so much, the CBIA Foundation Director, for joining us on WICC. And we will have a link to the full report on our website, voiceofct.com. Thank you, Dustin.
Thank you so much, Melissa. Have a great day.
You too.